Good morning. My name's Ryan Donnell. As Kiever said, I'm the high school minister here at the Pelham campus. Been in that since January of this year. I love it. Our high school ministry, if you haven't heard of it, it's called Wafuwasi, which is a Swahili word that means disciple or follower. And we meet on Sunday nights. Next summer, we're going to be meeting. We're small groups and our program on Sunday nights. So if you haven't been to Wafuwasi and you're in high school, we would love to have you. We'd love to plug you in. If you're not going to serve in senior honor, we would love for you to serve. And if you're not going to serve in children's ministry, we'd love for you to serve in student ministry. So I get a chance to be in front of you and say that in a quick way. So I'm just going to exploit that opportunity. We need your service. We'd like for you to come serve. So I'm also a young father. This is my first Father's Day. My wife is 32 weeks pregnant with our first son, who we're going to name Tristan Levi Donnell. I'm super excited about that name. And she's due August 11th. We're looking forward to that. We spent the majority of yesterday between about 9 and 4 at the awesomest birthing class I've ever been to. Of course, I've only been to one, but still, it was awesome. Actually, one of the ladies here from Grace, her name's Krista, she led the whole class, taught the whole class. It's incredible. She taught way longer than I'm going to teach you today. So I know she's super tired today. She was here last night, so I want to give her props. She did a great job. So I'm learning a lot. I need a lot of wisdom in my young age. I'm still taking it as a compliment when people, I was in Allendale this past week with our students, and I said a number of times, you know, I'm married, I have a child on the way, and they're like, oh, you're too young to be married. You're too young to have a child. I'm still trying to take that as a compliment for the next few years until I look older. So let me show a picture. I haven't got to show a picture of myself and Lydia. This is my beautiful wife. Lydia, she is 26 and awesome, and I'm going to use her as a wonderful illustration later in this message. So just wanted you to be able to see her. We're going to be in the book of Proverbs. Last Sunday started us off in this wonderful book. It's confusing and difficult in some ways, and then in other ways, it's so simple and straightforward. So we're going to be in Proverbs chapter 4 today. Proverbs chapter 4. I actually picked a chapter that's that is a little bit more metaphorical, a little bit more abstract, but it's going to get us where we need to go. It's going to get us to some practical application and to Jesus, and I think that's going to be good for us. Let me go ahead and read the first five verses. We're going to take this chapter sort of in chunks, in big chunks. That's the best way I can figure out to break it up, and it's got a lot of good stuff for us. So let's start with verses 1 through 5. Proverbs 4, 1 through 5. If you need a Bible, there should be one in front of you in one of the seats. My children, or my sons, listen when your father corrects you. Pay attention and learn good judgment, for I am giving you good guidance. Don't turn away from my instructions. For I too was once my father's son, tenderly loved as my mother's only child. My father taught me. He said, take my words to heart. Follow my commands, and you will live. Get wisdom. Develop good judgment. Don't forget my words or turn away from them. This morning, we're going to be asking one question. It's the main point of this entire message that I need you to take away. And it's a question. And the question is, do you have the Father's wisdom? Do you have the Father's wisdom? That's the question. So this is going to be about wisdom. The opening verses talk about wisdom, and the father, the dad to this son, is going to be going on to teach his son, teach his children about what wisdom is and how it's like a woman, a wonderful woman you don't want to let go of. But as I looked at this and I think about our own culture, I think that our culture is in deep need for wisdom. I think we have tons and tons of information. We have tons of things that you can Google, right? We're in the information age. There is more information than you can possibly process and put into practice. And I feel this way even when I'm studying theology or student ministry. There is so much out there. And what I need is wisdom. What I need is the ability to be able to process it, to apply it, to reflect God's glory in it. And so even in our culture, just from a purely secular standpoint, there's tons and tons of information out there. Like, you can Google anything, right? I mean, you want to know about anything, bam, bring it up on your smartphone. Just Google it. I mean, that's a common verb now. We've added it to the dictionary. You just Google it. And so Bing realized that and saw an opportunity for profit there. And they said, you know what? Google's providing lots of information. But you know what? Most people are dumb. Most people are not very wise. So we'll create a search engine that makes the decision for you, right? Because we know that there's so many options out there, you're probably going to have a hard time actually making a wise decision. So Bing is designed, you've used a search engine Bing, it's designed to filter sort of your decisions and provide you with the best decision for whatever your information search is looking for. Our culture needs Bing. We have a whole lot of Google. We have very little wisdom, but a whole lot of information. We also have a lack of fathers doing what this father is doing. He's taking time to speak to his children. He actually has something to impart to his son. He actually has some wisdom to pass down to him. Now, I was raised in a Christian home. I feel like I have something to give to my son. But at the same time, I feel a huge weight. I fear I have some dread and fear. All that weighs me down is what I feel when we sing that found song about being a father. I feel like I don't know what in the world I'm doing, right? I felt that all day yesterday at the birthing class. What have I gotten myself into? And I feel like between me and P. Diddy, who came out with a song recently, I don't know if you know who he is. He's a hip-hop rapper and wonderful artist, wonderful producer, musician, who wrote a song called Coming Home, and he's struggling with the same thing, okay? Maybe not in exactly the same way, but he voices something of what I feel, and I'm like, all right, yeah, me and P. Diddy, we're on the same page. You know, he's struggling because he's touring the world, and he has so much money, and he knows that that's spoiling his kids, and all right, so maybe I don't relate to that part, but he voices something that I feel like on just a very base level, normal pop culture sense. He talks about how he can provide his children with all of the things in the world, but he hasn't been home. And so the whole song is about coming home. And even though it comes from a really arrogant and proud perspective, it actually voices something. He's trying to confess something about a weakness in our whole culture is our dads have been absent. And whether you're looking at whether you're looking at Men's Health Magazine or you're looking at best practices from some other area of culture, both Christian and non-Christian people agree on this, that as far as fathering goes, we don't have a lot of wisdom, and we're not giving a lot of wisdom to the next generation. We're in deep need of wisdom. It's an area of weakness for us. But this father, he's practicing some wisdom. There's a couple of real practical ways in which he does this, which were helpful to me. Check out what he does. He says, my children, listen to when your father corrects you. Pay attention and learn good judgment. I'm giving you good guidance. Okay? He's taking time. This man takes time and spends quantity time with his kids to talk to them, to instruct them in a loving way. In Men's Roundtable, we talk about spending quantity time with your children, and that in the midst of that, you're going to have some quality time. But you've just got to be logging in hours, some FaceTime with your kids. And that's what he's doing. He's logging in FaceTime with his kids. Even Marlon Brando, who played Don Corleone in The Godfather, he knows this because he said, and I quote, "A man that doesn't spend time with his..." I'm not going to do the accent, okay? It's going to be... It would probably be awesome, but maybe by the time the 11 o'clock rolls around, it'll be ready. "A man that doesn't spend time with his family can never be a real man," okay? I actually think that's really biblical, all right? Next, he's teaching him. He's teaching him. He gets credibility from his own son. He says, "Hey, look, I was a son just like you. I had a mom and a dad, okay? I've been where you are. I've experienced that. I know what it's like. I feel you. Okay? I feel where you're coming from in the world." He's relating to his son. This is really beautiful. And he's teaching. He's gleaning and gaining credibility with his own son as he speaks to him. Does he have to do that? No. I mean, a lot of times I know that dads, it's like, I know what I'm talking about, and the perspective you're coming from, child, is ridiculous, and you just need to hear me on this. And yet he's trying to come alongside his son, trying to gain some credibility and say, look, I know where you're coming from. This is how I know where you're coming from. I was a son too. I was in your shoes. And this is what my father passed along to me. Really cool. So it's this tested experience he has, lastly. Dad passes on what he's experienced. And this is a principle that you see all over the place, that you can't really lead people where you haven't gone. Lots of people say it in lots of different ways. That's nothing new. But it's really true. As fathers, as mothers, as just followers of Jesus Christ, we can't lead people in a direction that we haven't experienced, that we haven't been ourselves. But this father's been there, and he's been through it. And so that's where he's trying to lead his son. All right, so that's what he's doing. Now, we're going to ask the question, a couple of questions, to get at the answer to whether or not you have the father's wisdom or not. And that is, what is this wisdom, and how do you get it? What is this wisdom, and how do you get it? All right? First of all, what is this wisdom? Let's look at what the father says this wisdom is like. We're going to read verses 5 through 13. All right, so he says, get wisdom, develop good judgment. Maybe another way of saying it. Don't forget my words or turn away from them. Don't turn your back on wisdom. And here it comes. For she will protect you. She will protect you. Love her and she will guard you. Getting wisdom is the wisest thing you can do. And whatever else you do, develop good judgment. If you prize her, she will make you great. Embrace her, and she will honor you. She will place a lovely wreath on your head. She will present you with a beautiful crown. My child, listen to me and do as I say, and you will have a long, good life. I will teach you wisdom's ways and lead you in straight paths. When you walk, you won't be held back. When you run, you won't stumble. Take hold of my instructions. Don't let them go. Guard them, for they are the key to life. There's something very unique about the way that this father describes what wisdom is like. All right? And to really kind of get where he's coming from, it's just going to sound like a fortune cookie if I don't tell you a little bit more of the Jewish story about what wisdom is like and where it's coming from and how we got here. And where this story is, okay? The book of Proverbs is a lot of times a difficult story in understanding sort of where wisdom from a Christian or biblical perspective fits into anything else. Because otherwise, it just feels like a bunch of statements that are sort of, hey, do this, hey, do that, hey, do this, this is the best way to do that. And really, it does have a place in the Bible, a really awesome, wonderful, good place. But I need to tell you the story of the Bible a little bit so that you get where this fits in from a distinctly, uniquely Christian perspective, okay? So just hang with me. This is a wonderful story. I'm going to try to tell it well. All right, first of all, wisdom in the Bible, okay, was what was supposed to be the way in which human beings reflected God. Okay, it has to do with bearing God's image. In the very beginning of Genesis, particularly in verse 26 and 27 of chapter 1, God says, let's make man in our own image. And so it says, in the image of God, he created them male and female. He created them. And he made them to reign. And it says, reign over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and the land and all of creation, to reign. Well, what we get right there is kind of God's design for people, okay? It's his design for humanity that they would bear his image in the world, that they would reflect his wisdom, his goodness, his virtue, his character, his wise order over the creation, that they would be reigners or governors. There'd be people who go out into the world, and they reflect what God is supposed to be like to each other and to over the rest of creation, and then back to God as worship. They're bearers of his image. And so wisdom was one of the ways, it was one of the aspects of reflecting God. It was the how to of reflecting God. Now, that gets totally messed up with sin, right? It gets short-circuited when they choose sin, when they choose a way of foolishness instead of the way of wisdom, instead of reflecting God. And so in the midst of that, God gives promises. He makes a people for himself, a people called Israel. You might have heard of them. Okay, they've been on the news. All right, he makes a people for himself, and he gives promises to them. All right? Not only does he give them promises, but he gives them really clear instruction. Look, this is how life can be put back together. When life gets put back together in your families, in your job, in work, in art, in relationship to me, it looks like this. And so the Old Testament, you wonder why the Old Testament can be so detailed about the very minute, specific parts of life for the whole nation of Israel. And it was because Israel was a microcosm for a while of how humanity was supposed to be reflecting God's wisdom in every single area of life. Every single area. And so for a Jewish man, he sees the whole Torah, is what they called it, the whole Torah, the whole law, as God's wisdom revealed about how people were supposed to be human beings under God's reign, under God's authority, under his kingship, under his love. All right, so in some sense, it was the whole law, the whole Torah. But then, there's also this really important story that would have shaped this dad's thinking about wisdom and how it's supposed to be lived out. There's this guy named Solomon. He was the son of King David. He was a young king, and he had a whole lot of responsibility, had a lot to live up to. People really looked up to his dad, okay? And they did for a few more thousand years. They really thought David was awesome, okay? And so Solomon feels the weight of this. He actually, when you read this in 1 Kings chapter 3, you find out that Solomon, he's kind of a divided man. He worships Yahweh, but at the same time, he sacrifices to other gods. He sacrifices animals on the high places, which is where you would sacrifice to other gods. All right, so he's kind of divided. In the midst of that, Yahweh comes to him and says, "If you ask me for anything, I'll give it to you." And so Solomon has a choice on the table, and Solomon actually says, "You know what I need more than anything else as a young guy with a whole lot of responsibility, who's the king of this nation that's supposed to reflect you to the rest of the world? I need wisdom." And so he asks for wisdom, and Yahweh gives him wisdom. And he piles on riches and honor to boot, just because he made a good choice. Now Solomon struggles throughout his own life, but at this certain point, okay, in his reception of wisdom, which is proved out, he goes and he worships Yahweh. He forsakes the worship of other gods, and he worships Yahweh. He goes to the temple, and God uses this man, this king, as a representative, and they have this phenomenal worship service. And it's not just phenomenal because it was really exciting and emotional. God's presence comes down like it did on the mountain when the Ten Commandments were received, and like it did in the tabernacle when everything was put together. Comes down in smoke, and his presence fills the temple. The people are afraid, and they are excited, and it's amazing. His presence fills the space and goes in and among the people and comes down on the temple. It's this amazing, amazing historical piece in Israel. All right, and so it was understood that wisdom was supposed to help the king to govern well and to reflect God's glory well. And it was going to bring God's presence, and it was going to fill and bless the people as they worship him. And then lastly, when we get to Proverbs, it starts to change. It starts to get more personal. And you're going to see this throughout Proverbs if you read it. This is a great book. There's 31 of them. You know, you can read one every day of the month and work through the book of Proverbs. It's super helpful. But one of the unique things about Proverbs is it's always talking about two ladies. Have you ever noticed this? It's always talking about two women. One woman, we're going to call her Lady Wisdom, okay? Lady Wisdom is always wisdom personified as a woman, as a girl. That's why he says, don't turn your back on wisdom, for she will protect you. Love her, and she will guard you. Verse 8, if you prize wisdom, she will make you great. Embrace her, and she will honor you. She will, etc. You're always going to see it's in 2, it's in 8, it's throughout the whole Proverbs, and then it culminates in the woman of Proverbs 31. So ladies, you're going to go home and read that today, and you're like, oh my goodness, I see this in a completely different way. Well, Bill's going to teach on that later, so I'm going to try not to steal his thunder. But it is really awesome. So Lady Wisdom is all over the place. She's wisdom personified as this woman that you never want to let go, right? And the other woman, I don't know if you've heard of her, her name is Lady Folly, is what we're going to call her. And she is personified as this woman who's like a prostitute, who's very attractive, right? Sin is very attractive, but it's dumb. And she really messes stuff up if you follow her, if you go to her. So there's always this contrast between Lady Wisdom and Lady Folly, and this is what the dad's talking about. He's saying, look, son, let me tell you something. Wisdom is like a woman that you never want to let go of. Wisdom is precious. You want to prize her, and she will honor you. You want to hug her. You want to embrace her and never let her go, and she'll be your protection through life. And this is real. I mean, this is a brilliant way to talk to your son, by the way, okay? Your son is already attracted to women, just so you know, okay? But to say, look, son, wisdom is really attractive. You have got to have wisdom. You have got to prize wisdom. And it reminded me of what it was like when I was dating my wife, Lydia. there was this elder in the church, and he would always come to me and say, from the very beginning all the way till when we were married, he would always say this. He'd always say, yeah, man, Lydia, she's a gem. She's a gem. And I just thought that was kind of funny at the time, kind of quirky. He'd always say, she's a gem. Which is fine to say, but his point was, she's really precious. Don't let her go. It would be really stupid for you to let her get away. Do not let her get away. Do not mess this up. You do not deserve her. She's way better than you, and darn it, you really need her. Like, she is just awesome. You're not going to do better than Lydia, okay? And so I feel like this is the sense, the emotion that the dad has. Look, dude, wisdom is like a girl you do not want to let get away. You do not want to let her get away. All right? So that's where he's going. Now, this contrasts to some things about the way that our culture sees wisdom, okay? So this is a biblical perspective. This is a Christian perspective on wisdom. It's not fortune cookie wisdom. It's not the kind of wisdom that you can just break open after some sesame chicken and open it up and kind of have a joke and laugh at it and then pitch it to the side, okay? This is a challenging type of wisdom. Like, if wisdom is this important, you cannot let her go. You must prize her. You must embrace her. Then it's a whole lot more important than Confucius, etc., all right, you can't do that with this kind of wisdom. Secondly, it's not the best philosophy that we could come up with. All right, it's not the best philosophy we could come up with. The Jewish literature, the Bible, even all the way to there's this book that was written about Ecclesiasticus. There's all these apocryphal writings from the Jews in between the time of Malachi and Matthew, and they always emphasize this. Everybody knows. Wisdom comes from God. It doesn't come from you. Any wisdom that you have is given to you by God, even as a non-Christian. So non-Christians, this idea of wisdom, non-Christians have lots. They can have lots of wisdom, even if you don't know God. But I would say, you know what? God gave that to you. God gave that to you. So wisdom comes from, it's not the best philosophy that we could come up with. Jesus is going to show us that. Not the best philosophy we could come up with. It's also not the best practices. Every magazine on every aisle, and I learned this from Mark Driscoll, you look at magazines and it's full, it's 50 steps to being blah, 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 blah. It's 23 steps to raise great kids. It's 11 steps to not better marriage, but better sex life. All the time. Well, after like 50 issues, there's like 200 steps. And I'm thinking, maybe those first 50, they just weren't enough. I mean, we had to add 50 more. People complain that Leviticus has too many rules in it. I'm like, okay, read, you know, Vogue magazine. They have way more rules and laws than even Leviticus does. He just keeps going. It's the best practices. It's all about technique, all about how to make your life in sort of a self-help way. Here's the secrets that we've come up with to make your life better. And actually, the Bible's telling us we need something a whole lot more than that. We need something a whole lot better than that. Look at verse 14. So the dad goes on and he says, Don't do as the wicked do, and don't follow the paths of evildoers. Don't even think about it. Don't go that way. Lost my place. Don't go that way. Turn away and keep moving. Verse 15. For evil people can't sleep until they've done their evil deed for the day. They can't rest until they've caused someone to stumble. They eat the food of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. The way of righteous, though, is like the first gleam of dawn, which shines ever brighter into the full light of day. But the way of the wicked is like total darkness. They have no idea what they are stumbling over. And for all the information, all the so-called guy wisdom that you may be able to get from Men's Health magazine, we are still just stumbling over ourselves in darkness. We are groping for a way to figure out how to have a life that's put together, how to have a peace that stays with us, how to have something to pour into our children that's going to matter, how to respond to a world who's suffering and in pain. And all the best practices and the best philosophies and the fortune cookies in the world are not going to give us the answer to that problem. Because here's the reality. It's not just this idea of the world's problem, it's your problem, and it's my problem. Sin is stupid. It's foolishness. And you can look at the whole book of Proverbs, read it for all of its practical worth, and see all the ways in which it shows you how parenting could be, how avoiding the temptation of sexual sin can be, how you're supposed to not be lazy, you're supposed to work hard and be diligent. And this is all true, and this is all right, and it is all good. I'll explain some more about it later. But here's the deal. You look at that, and you realize your life doesn't match up to it. You realize that you haven't chose wisdom every time. You've chosen a lot of foolishness, a lot of folly. This is the insanity of somebody who goes again and again back to an addiction. It's the guy who goes back to his cocaine addiction even though he knows that it's killing his brain and it's ruining his relationships with his family. It's the guy who cannot stop going back to the websites. He cannot stop himself from going back to pornography. It's the woman who just can't help herself to say that insulting thing about that other woman. You just have to say it. You're not supposed to, but you do. It's us when we're at the mall and we just can't help ourselves. We just got to spend the money to get that, whatever it is. It's covetousness. It's addiction. It's when you're in a fight with your spouse and you know that they're wrong. You know that they're wrong. And you just can't, and they have hurt you. And it's all you can do to keep from just saying something that cuts them and insults them, that you know will get them back. That's where we are. There is not a person in the room who has not chosen to stumble through darkness. There's not a person in the room who at every turn made the wise choice. You look at your life, I look at my own life, and I see all these ways in which I regret, and I'm looking at a son who I don't want to pass any of that along to. The fact is, we are in need of not just wisdom in a practical sense. We need wisdom as a person to do something for us, to reverse the direction of our hearts and our lives, because we're walking in darkness. We're in sin. We choose folly. And so that's the rest of the Jewish story. This is the good news. Wisdom, as the story in Israel goes along, she gets personified more and more and more through all the literature. And wisdom's always talked about as a woman who's a handmaiden that helped God create. You can see this in Proverbs chapter 3. Who's alongside, who brings flourishing and worship to the temple, who informs and instructs the king so that he can govern well, and on and on and on. The awesome thing is the metaphor of a woman who is wisdom becomes a man. It changes from just being an illustration, and it becomes a person, and his name is Jesus. What does wisdom look like when the preacher of wisdom steps on the scene, like the preacher in Ecclesiastes? What if wisdom became a human being? What if God's wisdom was enfleshed? Well, he walked around in sandals in Nazareth, and he took kids up into his lap, and he welcomed them. He was able to answer his critics and challenge them in just brilliant, genius ways. Like, I would never come up with the things that Jesus would say, okay? He knows how to lead men who are weak. At every single turn, you wonder, why was there a story before the cross? Like, why do we have any of that beforehand? Why would we have all that preaching and teaching? Well, it is not just this roaming philosopher walking around saying, you know, mysterious, interesting things. Oh, that's interesting, Jesus. What a cool thing to say. No, Jesus is taking wisdom, he's living it out, and he's challenging their understanding of what wisdom was supposed to look like in their time in Israel. He brings a challenge. He embodies God's wisdom for us. Check out Colossians 3. I want to show this to you. The apostles and his disciples got this. They understood it. And they started explaining it in just this way. And here's a couple of examples. Can't go into all the details about how they came to this conclusion. But I'm trying to get you to see how they would have seen the story unfold and seen Proverbs as one chapter in a story that culminates with Jesus. Colossians chapter 3 says, Paul's saying, look, wisdom, he's contrasting it to the Greek wisdom of the time. He says, you know what? You want to know what wisdom is? In him lie hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. Jesus himself, Jesus Christ, is the source of all the wisdom and knowledge. And then 1 Corinthians 1:20-30. I'm going to read this whole thing because it's just too good. All right, 1 Corinthians 1:20-30. You can just listen. So where does this leave the philosophers, the scholars, and the world's brilliant debaters? God has made the wisdom of this world look foolish, since God in his wisdom saw to it that the world would never know him through human wisdom, which is what I'm trying to say. He has used our foolish preaching to save those who believe. It is foolish to the Jews who ask for signs from heaven, and it is foolish to the Greeks who seek human wisdom. So when we preach that Christ was crucified, the Jews are offended, and the Gentiles say, this is all nonsense. But to those called by God to salvation, both Jews and Gentiles, anybody in the room, if you know God's calling you to salvation, you'll come to find that Christ the Messiah is the power of God and the wisdom of God. This foolish plan of God is wiser than the wisest of human plans, and God's weakness is stronger than the greatest of human strength. And then check this out. So he says, remember, dear brothers and sisters, that few of you were wise in the world's eyes, or powerful, or wealthy when God called you. Instead, God chose the things the world considers foolish in order to shame those who think they are wise. And he chose things that are powerless to shame those who are powerful. God chose things despised by the world, things counted as nothing at all, and used them to bring to nothing what the world considers important. As a result, no one can ever boast in the presence of God. And it culminates in this verse. God has united you with Christ Jesus for our benefit. God made him to be wisdom itself. Jesus is wisdom. Jesus is the challenge. You look at him, and the frustrating thing for all the people that followed Jesus was, why does he keep on talking about a cross? Why does he keep on saying, I'm the way to go, follow me. This is the way to be human. This is the way towards life. This is the way towards God. I am God come to you, and yet I'm going to go die on a cross. It wasn't the way that they expected it to be. It wasn't the way they expected it to go. And if you follow Jesus, and if you follow a way of wisdom, if you try to apply Proverbs 1 through 31, you will find that it will kill you. It will cause you to have to be crucified. You'll have to die over and over and over again in the process. The encouraging thing is that when wisdom step on the stage in skin and bones, that's what happened to him. So this is the way it's supposed to go. you're supposed to die. Like, you're supposed to feel like you're getting killed as you give up your life. This is the way it goes. This is the way of wisdom, is the way of the cross. Jesus said, if you want to follow me, you got to take up your cross. And then something else. It's not just the way that that happens. It's that he does it for us, okay? Graham Goldsworthy taught me that for anything to be done by God through you, you have to see what he has done for you. And so here's the good news, something that Proverbs didn't have yet. What Proverbs didn't have yet was God come in skin to live the life of wisdom that you and I can't live and couldn't live for ourselves. And because we've chosen a life of foolishness, a life of folly, a life of sin and darkness, because we're confused, we're messed up, we're twisted people, he goes to the cross, and that is the way, because he goes to the cross to suffer as the fool for you and for me. He goes to suffer as the guy who always made the wicked decision. That's what Jesus did on the cross. He substitutes his life of wisdom for our life of folly. And that's how God receives his sacrifice on the cross, is as a person who's a complete and utter failure and fool. And until you see that, you're not going to be changed. You're going to try to apply a whole lot of things in practice to your life, and you're not going to have power. Now, the whole rest of the book of Proverbs can come alive to you with power because Jesus came back from the dead. Jesus beat death, he beat sin, and in the resurrection, this is the end of the story. For every area that you die in, for every cross that you bear because of faith in the Messiah, Jesus, he will give life. He will give a resurrection, which is why even the guy in Proverbs can say that wisdom will present you with a beautiful crown. And then when he's talking about the way of wicked, and he says in verse 18, the way of the righteous is like the first gleam of dawn, which shines ever brighter until the full light of day. Like that, us having resurrection life all the way until Jesus comes back is just the way it's supposed to be. And the only way you get at that is if you see what Jesus has done for you, right? And that's where, as dads and mothers and sons, we get power for life change. So I want you to take that throughout the rest of our series, because there's going to be a whole lot of practical application that I'm not going to be able to do in this particular message. But I want you to know all that's worth it. All of it is the way in which God's image in Jesus gets borne out, stamped on our lives in all these detailed ways. And it's glorious and wonderful because of what he's done for us. So I want to make a couple of quick applications, all right? First of all, ladies, you see, Lady Wisdom is awesome. Isn't it cool that God reflected his glory in femininity in such a beautiful, robust, incredible, attractive, virtuous way? Christianity has a better take on femininity than anybody else. I love that, okay? So if you're wondering what Christianity looks like when it comes to femininity, you just look at Lady Wisdom. It's awesome, all right? Pay attention when Bill preaches it. Proverbs 31. All right, sons, if you're here this morning and you're thinking, you know what? My dad didn't pass on to me that. He didn't give that to me. He didn't give me the practical wisdom of how this fleshes out in my life, and he also didn't give me the gospel. And on Father's Day, I'm actually feeling a little wounded. I'm feeling frustrated. I feel like there's a deficiency. I want you to know that God the Father makes up for every deficiency that any of us, no matter how old you are in this room, have ever received or ever had from our own dads. Father can make up for that. He can heal those wounds. And then lastly, as the fathers, you've got to have the wisdom of Jesus. You've got to receive God's wisdom as Jesus by faith for it to be lived out in virtue and teaching and instruction and practical application in your life. So do you have God's wisdom? Do you have Jesus? I want you to take Jesus this morning and take hope in him for life and for every minute detail of your life. If you can embrace Jesus, don't let him go. Guard him, for he is your life. Let's pray. Father, I thank you this morning for Jesus. I thank you for having wisdom come down to us in our deepest need, when we needed it most, and not just showing us the way to be human, but being the perfect human on behalf of us, for our sakes, and doing away with our sin by forgiving it, and then giving us new life by your resurrection. I just pray you'd give us hope to embrace that, and to see it lived out in our church, in our community, in Greenville, South Carolina, in Powdersville, downtown, no matter where we are. I just pray that this would matter, that it would affect us, people would see that difference. We thank you. We give you praise. We love you. We pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.